chance, away with pomp and circumstance. Come join our merry dance to the rhythm of goodbye. Farewell, the jewel crown. Farewell, the velvet gown. Watch it all come tumbling down. Goodbye to the crown. Goodbye to the crown. Goodbye to the king of nothing really. Wave of a hand and a life of Riley. Pot Nazi, Pot King Billy. Goodbye to the crown. The dear old mum, mummified on gin and rum. Smile and wave and just play dumb. Goodbye to the crown.
Hello there, and welcome to another episode of The Monarchy here on Press TV with me, Samson Sees. You're watching the controversial programme on Britain. We give you alternative topics each week that are related to the UK. This time round, we will explore British politics overseas, and here's a clip as to why. The Syria election campaign began with full weight of the West and Arab despot states behind terrorists in Syria.
UK Foreign Secretary William Hague gave notice that the British government is to step up state-sponsored terrorism in Syria. He was speaking on behalf of the Orwellian-named group, the Friends of Syria, which is more accurately known as the Fiends of Syria. Given that the Syrian government is winning the conflict against foreign-backed militants, Hague's call for more violence is most likely a last throw of the dice for the Western powers. After Hague's meeting in London with the other state sponsors of covert terrorism in Syria, including the US, France, Saudi Arabia and Turkey, the British Foreign Secretary said,
"We've also agreed unanimously to take further steps together through a coordinated strategy to increase our support for the moderate opposition National Coalition and for its Supreme Military Council and associated moderate armed groups."
Forget the British verbiage. The key words here are increase our support for armed groups. That means more terrorism, assassinations, decapitations, and no-warning car bombings in civilian areas carried out by the foreign-backed mercenaries for Western regime change in Syria. An estimated 150,000 people, mainly civilians, have been killed over the past 3 years in the Western-backed terror campaign to oust President Bashar al-Assad. That campaign has evidently failed. But it's not over yet. American government-controlled Voice of America describes the latest Western aid as training and logistical support to rebel fighters, along with military equipment and light weapons. Again, forget the cynical verbiage. It all translates into increased Western terrorist killing power. Last month, for example, in the old city of Homs, before it was retaken by Syrian government forces, two double car bombs massacred at least 67 civilians there. Hundreds more were mutilated in those attacks. Tragically, more will follow on Western orders. Syria's national army may be gaining the decisive upper hand against the Western terror machine, but despicably, before this war is finally won, we can expect more carnage and bloodshed. Hague and his state terrorist allies forewarned of it. British covert state terrorism has a particular track record for car bombs against civilians. And with British special forces known to be operating inside Syria, directing the terrorists, alongside American, French, Saudi, Israeli and Turk special forces, we can expect more car bomb horrors. Recall the case in Iraq in September 2005, when two British SAS officers were caught red-handed in Basra by local Iraqi forces. The undercover British officers were driving a car loaded with explosives. The SAS operatives were dressed in Arab clothes. It can be safely surmised that they were on a mission to blow up some target, a mosque or a market, in order to fuel the sectarian violence between Sunni and Shia that was raging then under the US-led military occupation of that country. As Haig was speaking of ramping up violence in Syria, it marked the anniversary of another heinous British covert terror operation, this time in Ireland. 40 years ago, on the 17th of May 1974, a coordinated series of car bombs in Ireland claimed the lives of 33 civilians, including a 9-month pregnant woman and her unborn child. Three bombs exploded almost simultaneously in the southern Irish capital, Dublin. The fourth bomb went off in the town of Monaghan, near the border with the British-occupied northern state. The massacre became known as the Dublin-Monaghan bombings. It was the biggest single loss of life in the whole conflict, which was mainly confined to Northern Ireland between 1968 and 1998. Even in conflict-ravaged Ireland, the horror of the Dublin-Monaghan bombings continues to reverberate. The victims on that deadly day were mainly women and children. One family of young parents and their two toddler children was wiped out. The no-warning bombs in Dublin exploded in busy pedestrian streets at around 5:30 p.m. during rush hour. The intention was to inflict the maximum degree of human carnage. Bodies were strewn on streets, impaled with shrapnel. One young woman was found decapitated and was only identified because of her shoes. No one has ever been charged for this mass murder, yet the evidence of British state forces being involved is overwhelming. The pro-British loyalist militants who carried out the bombings have since been exposed either as members of the British security forces or as agents working for British Army intelligence. The collusion of the British state in that one act of terrorism is only the top layer of a putrid can of worms, which reveals many other acts of mass murder sanctioned by the British during Ireland's conflict. Today, instead of British loyalist gangs as proxies, we see Takfiri gangs operating in Syria, but with the same British MI6, American CIA, and Saudi intelligence handlers directing the terror traffic. When William Haig talks with his polished British accent about stepping up military support in Syria, what that really means is the official sanction of more horrendous civilian deaths and horrific human suffering. No doubt, the British expertise and the use of no-warning car bombs will be deployed with even more zeal. Their criminal track record speaks for itself.
The victory by Assad in Syria's elections will give him additional democratic, electorally bestowed legitimacy, and that is the real reason why the British establishment doesn't want an elected government. Britain's Royal Windsor Horse Show, which runs from May the 8th to the 14th, is unique in many ways. It is an international equestrian competition closely associated with the Queen. Indeed, the Royal website describes it as an annual fixture for which the royal family have a great affection.
The constant trail of British politicians, ministers, members of the House of Lords and members of the royal family to the Kingdom of Bahrain is an unnerving reminder to the Bahraini people that Britain has not got their back when it comes to democracy. Britain ran the place as a colony for decades, then helped architect a brutal state security apparatus that, to this day, torments pro-democracy activists in the dungeons under Manama.
Historically, British governments been involved in all links with the Bahraini's government, starting during the colonial time, which took more than 150 years. Then even when Bahrain got independence, they had very, very special room in Bahraini's foreign policy, and later on even extended on security issues. We know that there are so many specialists, consultants within the securities authorities in Bahrain are Britons. And nowadays, I think this support is being shifted from the under the table in hiding in the service. So the most strongest allies internationally to Bahraini's government is Britain. And we maybe we can say secondly is becoming United States.
Nearly 40 deaths have been attributed to the excessive use of tear gas since 2011. The torture methods used by police interrogators have become more commonplace, and the perpetrators act with impunity. Bahrain is going backwards on promised human rights reforms, and British police consultants have no doubt played a key role in violently attacking the protesters who make it out onto the streets each day.